Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is supported by SafeBand. SafeBand is the indigo silicone wristband that lets people know that you or a member of your family has been vaccinated to protect them from COVID-19. And with every SafeBand that's ordered by you or people like you, we donate one to a frontline key worker or vulnerable member of the community. Slowly, life will return to how it once was. Until then, we're determined to get things back to normal for those who've taken the first step. Find out more by clicking the link in the description or visiting safeband.me.
Welcome to the Manchester United Redcast with me, Chris Curley, on what has been a very big week in the life of being a Manchester United fan. To discuss the highs of Milan and the lows of Leicester, we have a very special threesome joining me today. Dan Riley is here. And we're joined by the unlikely twin brothers of Aaron Paul and Ben Paul. I never knew you two were related.
Solid. How many years apart, BP? How many years is it? Like?
It's, do you know what? We're almost identical twins, apart from the fact that I'm about 10, 20 years older than you.
That's it. I mean,
and we look nothing like each other. And we, apart from that,
there is another Paul who also has a Christian name, Owen Paul. You're my favourite waste of time. Anyone remember that one, Blast from the Past?
Well, the best thing I think you can say about the Owen Paul song was the episode of Pebble Mill, hosted by Paul Coyer, where he threw a link, which was like a lunchtime show for the younger viewers. It was like, what was it like? Like Steph's Pat Lunch, like This Morning kind of show. And they threw over to Owen Paul to perform his song. Yet, there was no sound and there was no singing, yet the song was coming in over the EBS. It's a classic.
It's on YouTube. If you can look up that, look up Five Star performing Can't Wait Another Minute in the canteen.
Is that Aaron, Pebble Mill, Birmingham?
Yeah, Pebble Mill, Birmingham. Yeah, classic. Gents, I hope this can be a cathartic podcast for us all today. Aaron, we've not heard from you for a few weeks. What's your sense of what happened yesterday? Because that's where we have to start.
Oh, God.
Are you still in bed?
Yeah, mate, I am. It was a heavy night afterwards. It was a heavy night. Me. It was a
duvet day kind of result, wasn't it, really?
Well, yeah. I don't get many of them duvet days either. So I'm embracing it before I'm summoned to the big house in central London. On an international week, which is never fun. How do you sum it up? You know, it's frustrating. The limitations of the squad are there. Like, we knew it months ago. We knew it in January. It just, again, it feels like we've taken sort of 3-4 steps forward and 5-6 steps back. You know, when you see a midfield of Fred and Matic, geez, I mean, someone compared him to Fred West. I can't do that. I'll compare it to Fred Flint. I'll call him Brazilian Fellaini. You know, he's just...
Well, there are games that Fred plays like that where you have to check his passport is indeed Brazilian. Don't make that.
Geez.
I think you have to check his passport for his profession to see whether it actually says footballer.
Matic. I mean, and then some fucking 2-bit journo is kicking off at me saying that fucking McTominay is the problem. What are you watching, mate? There's one geezer. I don't know if he listens to the podcast. If he does, fucking fight me, mate. Every time he puts up some random opinion about United. Yesterday he goes, Henderson, Maguire and McTominay are the reason Man United won't move forward. And I'm like, you thick cunt, mate. Have you not fucking watched United and thought, oh, well... You know, Lindelof actually hasn't been too bad the past few games. Lindelof, fucking Matic, the fact that Martial blows hot and cold like a boiler on the blink. It's just, there are so many issues again that are being opened up. We think we've got them sorted, but no, they get opened up again. It's very frustrating. But I'm very frustrated.
We can hear it. And I feel better you for saying it.
I think there goes our PG rating. I think if we can edit an explicit content message at the top of this, please. Aaron Paul is in the house.
You don't hear him talking to Kelly Cates like this.
I've been spending too much time with Millwall fans, boys. It just happens. You literally wake up and you have no filter in the morning. Trust me, it happens.
Kelly will be telling you to wash your mouth out with soap and water, Aaron Paul.
More than likely, but luckily I don't do that sort of in office hours, you know.
Ben, what was your take on the whole performance yesterday?
It was depressing. It was depressing from the outset. Ollie said, to quote, we didn't play with our usual normal spark. But I haven't seen that usual normal spark for quite a while. Because since the end of January, we've drawn against the likes of Arsenal and Everton and West Brom, lost to Sheffield United. You know, that's not the United spark. Prior to that, maybe, but we haven't played with this spark for a while. And yeah, we've gone 29 games unbeaten over the course of 14 months away from home. The bubble was about to burst, and boy, did it burst. Tactically, I think we shouldn't have played our reserves, especially before the international break. If Bruno's going to pull a muscle, do it now so he doesn't waste his time with United, but it does it on the international break. I didn't get why he played the reserves from the off, but there seemed to be a lack of hunger. There was a sloppiness. We didn't get out from the traps, and that played right into Brendan Rodgers' hands, because tactically, he owned us so badly.
Dan Riley, let me put something to you. It's been 120 days since the first game from the end of the last international break. We've played 35 games, a game every 3.4 days. We've won 20, we've drawn 10, we've lost 5. We've scored 65, conceded 33, with 17 clean sheets. Now, the 5 defeats have been all included being knocked out of the Champions League, the FA Cup and the League Cup. What does that tell you?
Okay, so, I mean, the first point, I think, and it's not an excuse, but it is a contributory factor to yesterday, is that you could clearly see that Leicester were a team who hadn't had as many games we've been playing. They looked fresh. They were up for it. I think we weren't up for it, and that's not good enough. But I think that the fatigue levels were clearly a contributing factor to that. And I think if you can't get going in a game like that, it's hard once you're down to get it back. And despite our equaliser, we never really were in that game. I do think there's could be a slight thing about us having a bit of a mental thing about big games, and you know,
I mean, I agree with you, but after Thursday night against Milan, that felt like a real mental breakthrough to me, because they played that out professionally, they did everything they had to do. I mean, Pogba got his class goal, and they played together as a team. And then for me, Aaron, he kind of changed it in particular parts of the team. He probably couldn't risk changing it, knowing that it was a big game going into the quarterfinal away at Leicester, and Leicester are a good side.
They are a good side. They're a really good side. And how they've become a good side is by being a settled side. You know, look at Tielemans and Ndidi. They've played a consistent run of games together as a midfield. I couldn't tell you the last time that Ollie played a consistent side. Granted, we've had injuries. Granted, you know, you've had players dipping in and out of form, but there's no consistency in our 11. There's zero consistency. I have a question for you boys as well. Does Weasel Boy get into this lineup?
Who is Weasel Boy?
Come on, everyone knows who little Rat Boy is. Rat Boy on loan at West Ham.
Declan Rice.
Lingard. He's Rat Boy. He's a little weasel boy, isn't he? He's a little weasel. Does he get into this lineup?
No. Can I go first on that one about Lingard, right? So I've watched Lingard pretty much all 90 minutes of the last three games he's played. and he's played like Jesse used to play, right? He's ran about a bit. He's played a lot. His success has largely come when West Ham have played on the break, right, which is what they do, and that suits him. Where does he get in this? He's been playing more as a number 10 than wide. The last 20 minutes of game, he'll play left or he'll play right. You're telling me he gets in ahead of Bruno? No. You're telling me he is shown consistent form over the last 3 years to warrant a place in his side? He's 28.
No, but in yesterday's game, does he play?
Off yesterday's game? What, he was better than Donny van der Beek, yeah. Off the matching the two performances, he was better. Donny's so a different argument, though.
Well, I'll pick this up here because just before they scored their second goal, I had to ask myself, where did van der Beek play for Ajax? Because it couldn't be as a 10, because he just can't play it. And that, and then the goal literally that comes, he's made some run, a bad run. And then Tielemans has sort of seen literally, it's parted like the Red Sea. Fred's kind of sort of half at right back. Matic has gone to press Tielemans and just got done. The whole centre of the pitch literally opened up, and that to me was the major problem yesterday. Was we had zero control of the game in the middle of the pitch.
Lingard, van der Beek. I mean, there was a well coached side there in Leicester City who know what they're doing because they play a regular side. The bits of our team he took out who have been fundamental to playing our shape. I include Luke Shaw in that. I include Bruno in that. They weren't there. And Matic was a cone yesterday. Fred's weaknesses were cruelly exposed by Maguire on the first goal, particularly. I have a lot of problems with Maguire yesterday. I thought his performance... I think yesterday highlighted to a huge degree the weaknesses of those players, didn't they, Ben?
Yeah, well, there's a great quote about Fred... There's only three things wrong with Fred. He can't pass, he can't tackle, and he can't shoot.
Just Ben, when Fred lines up a shot, my heart sinks. Because, you know, you can just tell it's going to go wide and you're going to see Ollie just do this face like, oh, good try, son, good try. It might genuinely, like, my heart sinks. It breaks every time you see him shaping up to shoot.
You know what? After that debacle, when Maguire should never have passed to Fred in that position, but Fred should not. I mean, it was diabolical, that back pass. We know it because I called it on our WhatsApp thing. Obviously, fuming. I said to make an example of him, you walk him off the pitch there. You substitute Fred there and then because you showed the rest of the team that just does not happen. Well, and if he'd done that. The second goal would not have happened because, yeah, he left Tielemans, left Matic for dead. But what the fuck, to coin a phrase from Aaron Paul, was Fred trying to do? He didn't make a challenge. It was weak, it was feeble, it was pathetic, and it allowed Tielemans just to stroll in and strike a beautiful shot. But Fred was at fault for that second goal, and that put the nail in the coffin. Fred should have been... And we said it, and Dan, I'll lead into you, Dan, because you said it yesterday. But you make four substitutions, and Fred ain't one of them.
I don't want to do a pile into Fred, right? Because I think we know what his weaknesses are. But what I will say is this: is that in terms of what we still continue to insist on playing these rehearsed press breaks that we're absolutely dreadful at. And that was when Maguire played it to Fred, that had rehearsed press break all over it to me. And it just sometimes... Just
Dan, but Dan, it. 2 weeks ago against Man City, we did the same thing and the ball got played to McTominay, who can take the ball and can make that first break, right? So we have done it and it can work.
Yeah.
And we played it quite often. It didn't work yesterday on that first goal because Maguire, who can see what's ahead of everyone, if you look at the replay, he has Telles on the wing, which is an easy pass. It is an easy pass to open his body out, give it to Telles plays it back to him, open it out. Maguire should never have fed it to Fred.
I agree. I'm not necessarily blaming Fred on that. I think they're both culpable of that. But I think sometimes it's just... I just think sometimes don't try and do it then.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But Fred, I'm going to defend Fred a little bit, because when Fred's value in the team is, he does press quickly, he closes the balls down, he tackles and he wins the balls back. He does that really, really well. That's his main job in the team. Granted, he can't pass it. The lad just can't pass it 10 yards and he can't break the lines. And that's a big problem for us.
And I think also there needs to be a bit of intelligence around that. You need to read the room. And he was having a bad game. So that makes even more so for me that Maguire shouldn't be giving him that. He should be thinking he's not having a good game. So I'm not going to give him another chance to mess up. Which is what he did.
I agree, because just before that, he'd lost the ball twice in dodgy positions.
He'd done a few hands up, so don't give him another one.
Maguire should have not done it. I mean, agreed. Ben, to take your point on the second goal, Matic presses the ball. He can't get there. They play round him like a cone. Fred is exposed. Lindelof drops back instead of engaging the ball, because the centre-half has got to come forward and engage the ball to stop the shot, and he doesn't do it. And Fred was completely exposed. The function of that midfield defence again. And remember, Fred and McTominay play to protect Lindelof and Maguire. Maguire yesterday was exploited all the time on a one versus one. He got booked for it. Vardy had him on toast. Vardy should have finished the game. You know, if you're going to be Man United centre-half, you've got to be able to defend one-on-one. And that's where we've been successful. Maguire can't do it. And I think Maguire's had a lot of stick and have defended him. Well, yesterday, I thought it was a major culprit to our downfall.
Is Bailly injured again?
Bailly's injured again, yeah. That's the thing about Bailly, though, isn't it? We like Bailly. He's got loads of qualities.
I love him. He's at let's be fair, he's the best defender at the club, or best centre-half at the club, but he's just unfit completely.
You can't trust that, though. So he has to trust Lindelof and Maguire.
Where's Phil Jones these days?
He's probably in therapy, I'd imagine. Can we talk about Donny van de Beek? Because I'm perplexed. I don't know what I think. Who wants to take up the Donny van de Beek case?
So this is my question, because I'm not a European football hipster, and I didn't watch enough of I haven't seen enough of Ajax before. So I'm going to start with this question: where did he play in the Ajax team? Do we know where he played?
Because somewhere around the middle, mate.
Yeah,
it was kind of on the right of a three in midfield, is what I understand.
Right. So my point is this: don't play him somewhere where he's not played and where he's not good at playing. So that just to put him in for Bruno, it just doesn't work. And he looked to me to be it almost looked like a little boy lost yesterday at times. He didn't look like he felt he was part of the team. And I just think whatever's happened, it's going to have to be either, yeah, I think it could be a clean slate next season. We either find a place for him where he's comfortable playing, or we move him on, because I don't understand why he's being played so.
I agree.
So sparingly.
I genuinely thought that we played the two defensive midfielders because Van de Beek or Pogba weren't available. Because on our best day, we played one of them with either Van de Beek or Pogba. And from when I've seen Van de Beek play well, and I still hold high hopes for him, I do. I think he's a very intelligent footballer. I think he's in the centre of the pitch with a holding midfielder. I would like to have seen him right next to Fred or McTominay and distribute the ball and open up defences, long range, long passing range, like a Carrick. But not
Benny's not that player. He is a short passing game rotational midfield player. That's what he is. He's not particularly quick. He's not physical. You know, we lose a lot. What Bruno does in that number 10, he does press really well. He tackles and harries, and he makes everybody else do it. Donny didn't do that yesterday. To me, I agree with Danny, looks absolutely lost. I don't see his physicality being able to cope with the Premier League. I haven't seen it. And I think you look at other the Ajax players as well, Aaron, that have come into the Premier League recently, Ziyech, Klaassen, people like that. They've struggled to come into the physicality of the Premier League. Aaron, what would you do with Donny van de Beek?
That's What kind of questions? That what would I do? I mean, what would do you
sell
do?
Him and keep him?
No, you keep him.
What?
You don't just biff him off at the first opportunity. Come on, pal. Come on.
He's had 27 games he's played. It doesn't feel like
he's played 27 games.
He's been in 27 games. He's got one goal and two assists, I think.
How many of those did he start?
How many of them have been sort of 10 minutes here, 8 minutes here, 15 minutes here, 20 minutes there? That's the thing. And let's be fair. If we were still at three subs, would Ollie even bring him on?
Well, he started him. He trusted him in a massive game yesterday to start him.
It couldn't have been that big.
How do you see he's on his future in that team? Where do you see him getting into that team?
God, that's a very difficult question. Again, there's so many players I expect to see out of that team. The likes of Matic, Juan Mata, a.k.a. the forgotten man completely. You know, you expect to see a lot of people moved on, and maybe he gets sort of ranked up the pecking order to like third or fourth choice reserve next year. But I don't know, I'm disappointed. I'm really, 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 really disappointed. I think he's a fabulous player.
I mean,
maybe he needs to operate in a three.
I don't see how we play is going to suit him. I mean, I think another thing that highlighted Leicester yesterday was how good their team and club is ran against ours. So, you know, Leicester's signing success has been phenomenal. Johnny Evans, 3.5 million, Soyuncu, Fofana, Ndidi, Tielemans.
Yeah, am I right in saying they've won as much as us?
They've won a league title sooner than we've done.
Yeah, no. In the past, sort of like since Ollie's been there, or you know, they've won as much as us.
But they've got players that they've bought players on their strategy, right? That have improved their team and their squad. Our strategy last summer of buying players to improve Ollie and let him get on. One is Donny van der Beek. We don't know what to do with. Telles is a backup left back. Two little lads have gone on loan. One's on the bench. So it's like, what are we doing? What is going on? Yesterday highlighted all of these issues, didn't it?
I think someone's knocking on the door. They're trying to get out of your bedroom there, Aaron. Let them out.
I think it's here with me. He's Donny van der Beek trying to get attention. You can hear his name being...
It's Phil Jones's wooden leg. He's got cramp in it.
And Didi cost 17 million from Genk, and Tielemans 40 million.
Mate, Tielemans,
They do good business, Leicester. They get rid of Maguire to us for 85 million and they bring in Fofana.
85 million. When you think about that, and the worst thing is, you know, it's not even Maguire's fault. The price tag is not Maguire's fault. The price tag is the sheer stupidity of Woodward and Judge and Richard Arnold for actually paying the price and going and getting him when, you know, they could have got him cheaper.
I mean, was that the right choice? I mean, I think Maguire does have qualities, but not maybe the qualities that he hasn't got get absolutely exposed when in a system that we play.
Alderweireld, mate, for me. Alderweireld was the man. When you could have got him for £25 million, Alderweireld was always the man. You know?
Maybe then, Aaron, but Jose hasn't been picking him. I mean...
Yeah, I know, but, you know, I still maintain we needed that experienced, calm head, a bit of a classy defender. Alderweireld, I feel, was the man.
Brought up loads of issues and problems, it seems, where none of us are all agreeing on anything because there's so many things to kind of talk about. Let's talk about the future and what's going to happen after the international break, after these messages.
If you want an e-bike that doesn't look like it's made for the shopping precinct, something that's less Mr. Bean and more Steve McQueen, check out the range of bikes from London-based Cooler King. From dope 250-watt city bikes to Harley Bobber-inspired 750-watt beasts that can tear your face off while leaving your smile intact. Cooler Kings are made in limited numbers, yet highly affordable. Check them out now on the web at cooler.bike or find them on Instagram with hashtag CoolerKingBike. Cooler.bike. E-bikes that are cool AF.
Welcome back to the Manchester United Redcast with me, Chris Curley. And with me, of course, is still Ben Paul, Aaron Paul, Dan Riley. Dan Riley, in the week, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said that winning trophies can sometimes mask what's really going on at a football club. Is he right? Is that the kind of thing you expect a manager to say going into the final months of the season and competing for trophies?
So I think someone made a point on I think it was on one of the Athletic writers where he said that, you know, would it be good to win a trophy and come fifth? He said, well, ask Louis van Gaal. I think what Solskjaer's talking about is the long term, that he feels he's in a long term rebuild, and that the important thing is that he gets that rebuild right. And whether or not we win trophies is another matter. But I think it's going to be the gap. If we don't win a trophy this year, I think we're getting close to the longest gap that we've previously had, which is 85 to 90 without a cup. So it's Manchester United. You know, you have to win trophies. Yesterday when Chelsea were on, I think they said that if they don't win a trophy this season, it's two seasons without winning a trophy. And that's the longest they would have gone since Abramovich came in, which is 2003. Therein lies the problem. We have to be winning stuff. And I think the questions that will be raised at the end of this season are, is the rebuilding taking too long? I think we're all in agreement that we don't think he's been given the correct tools. And I imagine that come the end of this season, he won't be given enough tools to battle against what is clearly a rejuvenated and much stronger Manchester City. They've bought players who have fitted in and look like they're going to be around for a good long time now. So it's just a question of can we bring in the right personnel to give Ole that correct rebuilding?
Ben, did Ole's comments this week about the trophies fill you with confidence, or did it perplex you?
No, I like his sheer honesty. I do. He's not a man of ego. He's a man of he's a realist. It doesn't frighten me. What frightens me more is the managers that paper over the cracks with bluster. And a Mourinho kind of did that. And I prefer him to be the way he is. I wasn't scared about that. But I agree with everything Dan just said. There is a resurgence in our competitors of late, and this season, City look incredibly impressive, and they do find players that fit into their style. And herein lies the problem. It's fitting into their style. And I think it's as important to bring in the right people as it is to establish our style. And I'm hoping with Johnny Murtagh and Darren Fletcher and Carrick at the club, but I'm hoping we can establish that style and a Manchester United style. Because you look at players that like Foden and Bernardo Silva at City, they just slot in. And it could be that Haaland goes to City. At the moment, who knows? It's a week. Everything happens on a different things happen every week. But it could be Real Madrid at the moment. But you can see that kind of player slotting in. You can see any player slotting in because it's one or two players that are coming through and slotting in. Chelsea have got an incredible wealth of talent there. Whether they'll gel together, well, Tuchel has done a pretty good job in the last few weeks. From nowhere, they could win the Champions League and the FA Cup. I think it's, in answer to your question, Ole, it doesn't bother me. I think he understands the club, and I think, and I'm hoping, he understands the importance of setting a style and having a five-year plan.
Aaron, have you seen enough progress?
Yeah. I think we're making the same old mistakes, aren't we? It's been the same old story for a couple of years now, and the same old mistakes. We're like, yeah, right, we'll address it in the summer. Yeah, we'll address it in the summer. But we never seem to address anything.
I mean, that's the worry, isn't it? That Ollie has progressed. The football is definitely better than Jose and LVG. The league performance is better. But I think it's the types of games we're losing them in, the manner we're losing them, the way we're losing them.
Yeah.
I think Ray doubts sometimes that Ollie can take us to that level, doesn't it?
You think about Palace and Sheffield United, you know, Arsenal, bloody hell, we should have been winning those games. We should have been winning those games.
I think about Chelsea in the semi-final, Seville in the semi-final, I think City in the semi-final.
God.
I see Leicester in the quarter-final.
That's the frustrating bit. I still maintain there's a lot of work to be done on the recruitment side. Look, I cover a lot of Football League stuff as well. You know, Championship, League One, League Two. And let me tell you, recruitment is 11/10 of the law. If your recruitment's shit, you're in trouble. You're in big, big trouble. The reason that you see some of the clubs in the Championship, League One and League Two do well and sort of progress is because their recruitment is on point. You know, I'm going to bring it to an ex-United player, Mick Harford. Do you remember Big Mick?
Yeah, Luton Town, number 9, big scary Mick at Wimbledon, used to beat the crap out of people.
Absolutely, Big Mick. Big Mick is head of recruitment at Luton Town, who have a small budget, a real, real tiny budget. Yet, you know what? Consistently, he finds players that will work in their system, one, that will buy into their ethos and their culture, two, and three, that will come in at the certain price, you know, the right price. And I'm not saying go and get fucking Mick Harford, but what I'm saying is that we need a structure, we need a style, we need an identity, and we need to buy players that fit into it. Right now, we're about to go into one of the most difficult transfer markets, whatever you want to call it, in history. Because there are clubs up and down the land, in and out of Europe, looking for a centre-half and a forward. Everyone is looking for a centre-half and a forward, yeah? Chelsea are looking for a centre-half and a forward. Liverpool looking for a centre-half and a forward. City definitely looking for a forward.
Aaron,
potentially looking for a centre-half.
Can I interrupt you? Because you cover a lot of the leagues, the different lower-down leagues.
Yeah.
Have you spotted any talent? Because we were kind of talking about it last week, yeah, that you know, we don't have to go far and wide to find talent. Leicester seem to find a lot of domestic talent. Can you see that? Can you see potential in Dem Hills?
Absolutely, absolutely, mate. I'm telling you, Emi Buendia at Norwich. You know what? If you're going to sack off Lingard, I'll go and chuck 10, 15, 20 million pound at Emi Buendia. Max Aarons, fantastic player as well, at Norwich City. A lot of talk about
though. What about centre halves and strikers?
A lot of people talking about Nathan Collins at Stoke. He's a centre half.
Yeah.
You know, they've got another lad there called Harry Souttar, who's an absolute beast. The man is humongous. He's a real, real animal.
Tony has got broke. You know, I think that we talked this a couple of weeks ago. You know, United tried this with Dan James. They bought him from Swansea, right? So they've been doing it. They've been looking. They've been trying it. The other Premier League clubs have had success with people like Ollie Watkins coming up from Brentford in the Championship. And there's a lot, that market seems to be richer of people being able to make the step up now into the Premier League. Ivan Toney as a centre forward at Brentford is breaking records. Do you think someone big in the Premier League will go for him? Is he good enough for Old Trafford? Are these players good enough and robust enough for Old Trafford?
I just wonder if the bright lights would scare him a bit.
Aaron, have you seen much of Garner at Forest?
Yeah, he looks good, you know. He looks good. I was talking to someone on Saturday. I can't tell you who, but I was talking to someone on Saturday who turned around and said that a Premier League club is interested in him next year.
Tell us where he plays, Aaron. What's his
central midfield? He controls midfield. He's like Michael Carrick Light. Well, he knows how to do the basics very, very, very well.
You see, for me, if he has a good season in the Championship, I say let's give him a place in the first team squad next season, and let's just see what happens.
What I've seen of James Garner at Forest, I think they gave him the captain's armband in the last game. He's not ready for Man United playing 25 games a season yet. And if he only plays 5 to 10, you're going to set him back. So the idea of putting him, I think he's a year away from being a first team squad.
How old is he, Chris?
He's 20. But it's 20. That position's different. I think if a Premier League club wants to take him on loan next year, that is... the best move for him. And also,
wasn't McTominay that age playing centre mid?
His physicality.
Yeah, McTominay came with the Fergie seal of approval, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And his physicality is different to James Garner. James is still not, you know, filling out as a man just yet at 20, I would say, for the Premier League.
Stick him on the Brian Robson bottle of stout and a diet.
But it's interesting, isn't it, about, you know, trying to, as Aaron just mentioned there, are they robust enough to and cope mentally with playing for Man United? It's the recruitment side of that is a completely different game.
I'll tell you what, if it was up to me, yeah, I'd have a real policy if I was running the Premier League club to say anyone youth prospect-wise who we think is going to make it has to do at least a year in the Championship. Has to do a year at Stoke, at Luton, at Millwall, where they're going to get beaten up a bit, yeah? Because let's be fair, the Championship is one of the most brutal leagues in the world. It is brutal as fuck. League One is even more brutal. But League One, you're sacrificing quality for sort of quantity of games and minutes. But the Championship, if you can cut it there, you can cut it anywhere. Take a good player, Joe Worrall at Forest. Joe Worrall will get a Premier League move this summer.
Yeah, Burnley have been linked with him in the past, I think.
Good player.
I mean, what's interesting about the Championship is that, and the competitiveness of it, the last couple of years, the teams that have got relegated have pretty much come straight back up. I mean, you look at Norwich and who's second in the Championship at the minute with them?
Watford.
They were relegated last year. Bournemouth are in the playoffs. So, you know, I think the teams that come down this year, whether that's Newcastle, Fulham, Sheffield United, and they'll all keep their money and probably will try and keep their squad so they can come straight back up again. So picking the right club that's competitive enough for any kind of United youth player, I think it's a trickier prospect than it maybe has been before.
How's Mengi doing at Derby then?
He's doing okay. I mean, they'll talk him up. So he's starting four or five games. He's played, they've put him in a back three or they've played him wing back. I mean, one of the things I think from watching it and reading about him is that, again, the physicality of that level of football he's not used to. I remember Tendon's only 18, 19. So he's got a lot of growing to do. So that's still, you know, a year for him in the Championship will do him the world of good next year.
A consistent year somewhere at, you know, maybe at Derby again, maybe at a club that sort of working higher up the league table, because I think you'll see Sheffield United, you'll see a few players go from there. And if Fulham get relegated, they're looking, I know they're looking for a centre-half badly. They're going to lose Joachim Anderson, who's looked really good, by the way, Anderson.
He looks like he could do a Premier League job in
a... He's a good player. He's a good player, Joachim Anderson. But, you know, Ted Mengi at Fulham, Ted Mengi at a Sheffield United would do very, very well. Very well.
I mean, recruitment is everything, but we can't be confident in our recruitment over the last 8 years. You just can't. You know, you look at, I go back to Leicester again, but I think Leicester is a perfect example of buying players young who have become mainstays of their team in Tielemans, Ndidi, Fofana, Soyuncu, all these people. And that level of recruitment is astonishingly successful. And maybe they're the exception to the rule. But ours has been, frankly, woeful.
Is that going to be part of Fletcher's remit, do we think?
Oh, you'd have to think so, wouldn't you, Aaron?
I hope so.
I mean, what else are you going to do?
I think Fletcher's going to be used as the big scapegoat. When they fail to sign players, it will be like, oh, well, you know, we had a transfer team working on it and they couldn't quite get it done, or they didn't think it was going to work, you know. You look at Leicester, by the way. It's John Rudkin is the man at Leicester who signs all these players. He's also the reason they got N'Golo Kante, Riyad Mahrez. He's the reason they signed Jamie Vardy. He's a fantastic person, and that's the thing. Again, you know, we talk about recruitment, we look at recruitment teams, it's all about personnel. At Norwich City, they got Stuart Webber, who controls a lot of stuff there. He's the one who sent Huddersfield up through the leagues and into the Premier League. He's employed this sort of money ball model there. John Rudkin at Leicester has been fantastic.
But
what credentials does Darren Fletcher have? That's the question.
But
to Aaron, be a director of football.
I think by highlighting that there are those characters that kind of have operated at these clubs and done brilliant recruitment. In any other industry, the big boy would just come in and say, right, we're having you. You come to us and you do that job for us. There's one problem. That person comes to United, tells them what to do, tells them, no, don't sign Paul Pogba for, you know, Pog back, hashtags, blah, blah, blah. You should sign these three players here. That's not what United want. They don't want to be told who to buy because they want to buy glamour players. They want to buy people like Alexis Sanchez and put him on a piano in the pitch. The problem is that that we know that not only do the Glazers not like to spend money, but we know that Woodward loves to operate in this world. And I'm afraid that's why they've never got... it's the only possible reason why they've never got someone in, because that person will come in and tell them...
By and large, that's true. I think they've moved away slightly from that the last couple of transfer windows in what they've tried to do and getting rid and not doing that so much. I mean, this summer is... I think we all know the amount of wheeling and dealing that is probably needed and necessary, and you think, but I don't expect there to be that much. I mean, the whole summer is based on whether Pogba stays or goes and how much we might get for him.
Which is a shame, isn't it? Because, yeah. Let's be fair, under David Gill, we used to get shit done. You know, yeah. We used to get shit done quietly as well. I remember when we signed Nani, Anderson and Hargreaves in one day. You know, what a day that was. And we got stuff done without people knowing about it.
Don't you think they're using that chatter of transfer rumours to big up their digital numbers for their Chinese market? Do you know what I mean? It's like they want... And I reckon we'll see over the next 2 weeks some stories from favoured United journalists linking us with a big target as a policy of appeasement.
Sancho.
Pardon?
Sancho,
yeah. What about Sancho? Is he coming?
Well, I'm asking you, is he going to be the big target?
I don't know. You'll get stories of Harry Kane coming back, I reckon. You know, I think that's what you'll probably have. He's got two big transfer decisions which will affect the budget, I think. One is whether Pogba stays or goes, and out of Henderson and De Gea, who stays or goes, and what can you get for them?
Fuck me, they should offload Martial if they can. Get someone.
Well, Martial's, I think, the third one. I think he's the third one. Well, those two, they're probably your two. That's where you get your most money, aren't they?
You know, I think, joking apart, they should have played Martial yesterday.
Very good.
But we've got a break of the international break coming up. And then when we come back, we've got three games in a week. We've got Brighton at home, back in the Premier League. Then we're playing Granada, or away at Granada, which is a local derby in the Europa League. And then we're going down to Spurs for the return fixture after they beat us 6-1 at home at the start of the season, which will be an important game in the race for top four, because Spurs aren't quite out of that race just yet after last night's win. Ben, how do you see the results and the performances going when we come back? Well rested, fired up, or... will they tail off? And is it, you know, it's a big 8 weeks for Ollie?
I think, I'd like to be optimistic. So I'll stay optimistic. I think the break will do us good. I think we'll nurse back a few key players, Rashford in particular. So I'm looking hopeful for that. I hope we stick one over on Mourinho. The one saving grace of bowing out of the FA Cup was seeing the utter humiliation of that team in the last few weeks. I told... My mate told Danny Fenton that they've got a cancer in that club, and this, when he was waving it in my face that we've got Mourinho, I said, just you wait, he will ruin your club from the inside, and he is. He's a nasty little fucker, and I can't wait to do one over on them. And rumours that if they let him go, they're going to pay him 25 million. The man does so well out of failure. So I hope we stick one over on Tottenham. We'll beat Brighton at home, but of course, and all our eyes on Granada. I'm surprised you haven't done your Lucy Meacock or Bob Greaves jokes yet.
Well, you've ruined it now. I can't do them. I had a whole Chris Talbot one ready to go. I mean, Tommy Wilson, I mean, it was all there. You know,
you're Touch going McCaffrey.
Playing way down Key Street. I mean, you know, you ruined it. You just ruined it. Dan, when we come back, how's it going?
I'm not sure about the well-rested bit, because there's three World Cup qualifiers in this week. Portugal, I've thankfully got two pretty easy ones in Azerbaijan and Luxembourg, but they've got a tough game in Serbia. So I'm no doubt Bruno will be playing the majority of that. Fred will be well rested because South America qualifiers aren't happening because basically it looks like everyone in Brazil has COVID. And I don't know. It's a tricky one. I mean, I think what you do get after the international break is that players come back and it's back to the club, and it's and sometimes you get that kind of a little bit of a bounce on those games. Brighton are playing well though, aren't they?
Brighton are playing well. They scored a cracker yesterday.
So I think the key thing now is that we don't implode for the top four, because obviously I'm not suggesting top four is all that, but it's about recruitment, isn't it? And if we're not back in there, we are gonna struggle with the multitude of big name players we're going to be linked with.
I want second, and I want to win the Europa League now. And I think anything else is failure. Aaron, when we come back after the international break, Ollie has a big decision actually to make between Henderson and De Gea for the rest of the season. Do you have any thoughts about which way he'll go and how the run-in's going to pan out for us?
I think De Gea comes back after the international break, you know.
Interesting.
I really think he does. I think this whole time, you know, De Gea having a baby was actually quite a good little PR move for Ollie, because, you know, all the sort of woke characters sat in there going, oh yeah, look at him giving his goalkeeper paternity leave and all that. Ain't that nice of him? What a lovely man he is. Yeah, cool. Whereas Ollie sat there going, right, great, I can give him Henderson a bit of an extended run. He can shut up. He can show me what he's about. And look, he's looked decent. Granted, he's had one mistake or whatever it is. Look, isn't it? But I think De Gea comes back.
And I think whoever starts against Brighton will be the goalkeeper next season, and the other one will get sold. Ooh. I think that's, we can probably make a
fair. I can't see them selling Henderson. No.
He won't want to stay, though. But I don't think they can keep the pair of them, can they?
I think we will see Henderson playing more to give off the impression that if you want De Gea, you can come and get him, but you're going to have to pay. You're going to have to pay big money.
I say we call both of theirs bluff and we play Big Surge instead. Yeah, fucking both of them. Yeah, wind them up properly. Yeah, it might be you. Bang, bring the gum chewer back.
Do you know what? He can sell both of them. There's talk of bringing Martinez in from Villa.
Why?
We are never going to make as many changes as we all think. If there are three new players coming in the summer and they don't come in the last couple of weeks of August, same on wages, I'll be amazed. I think the De Gea Henderson thing is a real subplot to look out for on April the 3rd against Brighton. Lots to play for till the end of the season. Ben, Aaron, Dan, always a pleasure.
You've forgotten one thing. There is going to be one change.
What's the one change?
Team viewer.
Oh, well, Mike's, I mean, let's, oh, well.
You know what, I think this is the Michael Knowlton.
You've ruined my outro. We can save team viewer.
It was such a lucrative deal.
It's the Michael Knowlton sponsorships.
Well, the team viewer share price crashed after the announcement. So say what you will.
It was such a lucrative deal. I got a call from the World Service to do something on it. So I did that on World Service, talking about Glazonomics and how they make their money and whatnot. And, well, that was after I complained to the club that basically this was just one of Ed Woodward's scheme to scam people out of double the money for kit. Because, you know, they were planning to put Chevrolet on the shirt till January.
Yeah.
And then swap it around. That is just a fucking con. That is the biggest con I've ever heard in my life. And it's parents who suffer, because the kids are like, yeah, well, I want this shirt now with TeamViewer on it. I don't want it with Chevrolet on it. You know, my mate Rufus, he's not wearing one with Chevrolet on it, so I want the TeamViewer one. And I've got the second kit and the third kit and the keeper kit. And how much are they? Well, they're all £75 each. It's just money.
I tell you,
where I get my kids' kits, they're not Aaron.
Don't know about
you should give him that tip.
I'll give you the link.
I know the, from the kit situation, the sizes are so small they grow out of them within 6 months. That's another rip-off con they're doing for us. But then they do that at Blue Harbour as well, and Marks and Spencer's.
It's Glazonomics. It's Glazonomics. That's what it is.
That's it for this week. More about Team Viewer after the international break. I know I'll be away for a couple of weeks. It's been a mixed bag of a week, and it's been a cathartic experience, gentlemen, discussing all things Man United with you. Thanks for joining us. And one final thing. Come on, you Reds.
This is a Playback Media production. Get all the associated links for this podcast at unitedredcast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.